Hi, I'm Erica Ramirez, founder of Illy and host of What About Your Friends, a podcast dedicated to the many lives of friendship and how it's portrayed in pop culture. Every Wednesday on the Ringer Dish feed, I talk to my best friend, Stephen Othello, and your favorites from within the Ringer and beyond about friendships on TV, in movies, pop culture, and our real lives. So join me every Wednesday on the Ringer Dish feed, where we try to answer the question TLC asked back in the day, what about your friends?
This episode is brought to you by eBay Motors. With over 122 million parts, from superchargers and brakes to exhaust kits and beyond, eBay Motors levels your baby up to its peak performance. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Max. The new HBO original limited series, The Sympathizer, is an espionage thriller and cross-culture satire that follows a communist spy during the final days of the Vietnam War and his new life as a refugee in Los Angeles. From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr. and based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel, The Sympathizer is streaming now exclusively on Max. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more.
Cold open question of the week, Kaz.
What's up, Shoes?
There was a dude who got filmed at Battleground, a fan in the stands, popping open his iPhone and putting Double or Nothing on in front of him, where he could still see the ring, but he could also see NXT. Have you ever done that?
Not for wrestling, but definitely for other sports. I've definitely been at pay-per-views and
watched a basketball game.
Definitely threw on a Knicks game like while I'm there, or an important football game, but never another wrestling show. I mean, I've never had the opportunity
of opportunities out there. I feel like this guy, everybody's making fun of this guy on Twitter, and I'm just like, this guy's a fan. That's what you do.
Yeah.
But if you're sitting at home, I mean, you know, I get it. You buy tickets. I guess it falls into the category that I always complain about, where it's like, you're at the show, enjoy the show. Quit filming the show. Quit waving your sign around. Just enjoy the show. Mm-hmm. But so you can enjoy two things at once if you're not bothering anybody else.
I mean, enjoy what he wants to enjoy. You spent your own money. Don't get your hand out of my pockets and your eyes out of my pockets. Talk about something.
Yeah, he paid for that seat. He paid for his ticket. He paid for that Peacock subscription,
right?
And that iPhone,
right? And who knows if he even paid for a ticket? Who knows if that was just a contesting one, or you had
it might be a WWE plan. They're just sending people in there to watch Battleground during.
Who knows? Who knows? We do not know anything.
You, sir, know more about Double or Nothing than I do because you were there. You were part of the opening show. But let's just start our show and then we'll talk about it.
Let's do it.
What's going on, jabronis? It's Pitch Mr. Perfect, Skylar Astin.
Hey, this is Bruce Pritchard.
This is Roast Battle Season 1 champion Mike Lawrence.
Husky Steve Kazee.
This is Trey Kirby.
This is your girl, WWE superstar, the legit boss, Sasha Banks.
Hi, this is Lillian Garcia.
My name's Kevin Owens.
I'm Shinsuke Nakamura.
I'm AJ Styles, the phenomenal one, if you will, and you're listening to them.
And you're listening
you're
to.
You're listening to.
And you are listening to.
You're listening,
and
you're listening to.
You are listening to the Masked Man Show.
The Masked Man Show.
The Masked Man Show.
The Masked Man Show.
The Masked Man Show. Masked Man Show.
Welcome to the Masked Man Show with Kaz. It's a triple pay-per-view PLE review episode of Monday Mask Mondays and the Monday Masked Man Show. How you doing, man?
I'm tired as fuck. but I'm here and happy, bro. I'm excited. I'm excited to do the show today.
I got to ask you up top. Everybody's been wondering, how was catering?
Not going to hold you. It was a solid B+.
That's a good thing.
It was solid B+. Yeah, no, they had the salmon was straight. You know what I mean? They had prime rib for some prime rib.
They had the prime rib?
They had prime rib.
And they had the guy cutting the prime rib.
No, but they did have it like pre-cut and the guy was bringing it as like. But there was a guy. Like
It wasn't just a tray of prime rib, which is so sort of anti-prime rib.
It is a tray of prime rib. Like you knew he was back there cutting it, but he wasn't like cutting it as he was serving it to you, right? Like it was a different experience. But it was
there was there a make your own waffle bar?
There was not a make your own waffle bar. No, it was not. There was no customizable options in catering. It was very solid. It was
for the record. I don't know that WWE's ever had a make your own waffle bar. This is a reference to last episode when I was just talking about things that would make me pop at in a catering.
Nah, it was solid, bro. They had salmon back there. Good prime rib. They had a shrimp po' boy. Which was nice. It was really good. It was good. They had a nice drink set up. AEW treated me very, very well, and more importantly than that, they treated my mom and my aunt really well, who happened to be in Vegas for Memorial Day weekend. I was like, hey, could my mom and my aunt come to the show? And they rolled out the red. My mom's exact words, she said they did everything but short of roll out the red carpet for me and my sister. So they're wonderful in her
amazing book. what a baby face spot. That's great work by them.
It's great work for them. Shout out everybody back there. Shout out Mike Mansouri, obviously Renee Paquette, longtime friends, incredible people. And I had a blast back there, man. It was
anybody
fantastic.
In the world better than Renee at doing that job?
Yo, so here's it. So she helped. She basically wrote the entire buy-in show, right? So, mm-hmm. like, since probably 3 or 4 days before the show, she had literally I've never seen somebody more prepared for a pre-show, mm-hmm. right? Like, she had every single potential question that she would ask on the show. She had the rundown of all the backstages and when people arrived and everything like that. But like in wrestling, which shouldn't surprise anybody, things changed on the fly. Mm-hmm. I think the script might have changed like 3 or 4 times in the 90 minutes I was there for the preparation of the pre-show. But she was awesome. And she's literally, you said it, right? Like, I don't think there's anybody better.
With all that preparation, it still feels so off the cuff. Or she just starts talking and you just feel like you're in the middle of a conversation. Yeah,
that's the thing. Like, it was preparation, and then... You know, after we did all that, she's like, listen, you know how this shit goes. Like, we're probably gonna have to go off the cuff for most of it. And that's pretty much what happened when the show started. But because of the massive preparation, it didn't feel like we were out there without a raft. So it was really fun. I had a great time. Shout out Stoke. Shout out Paul White.
Who is harder to hear, Stoke or Paul White? I mean, they're both equally far from your head.
If I had to guess, I guess I'd put it on Stoke. I put on Stoke. Stoke was probably a little bit harder to hear, man. They were hype. He was a massive baby face. Like the backstage, not even the backstage, the setup was like right in the middle of the T-Mobile Arena crowd. So as we're walking out, you hear the hooting and hollering and the yelling at stuff. And Stoke, he's going back and forth to the crowd. And Paul White, he's a massive, I mean, God, anywhere he goes, you could tell the type of reaction he walks and garners. So he was so much fun to work with, man. It was fun.
We got to get to a lot of match breakdowns. I watched zero wrestling live. I watched it all late at night after I got home. Did a double cookout this weekend, nice. Saturday and Sunday, going both days. I will say, you guys listening to this can't tell, but the guys who are on the show with me, and maybe we don't have to do a social clip of this, but you might notice a big Band-Aid on the side of my head. I got straight
up. You got bust open the hard way?
I got hard-weighed by my 4-year-old. When I picked him up to leave.
He's hardcore. He's hardcore.
Yeah, he's hardcore. When I picked him up to leave the second one, no crying, no tantrum, just straight up no, and punched me in the face 2 times. Hit my glasses and opened up like an inch-long cut on my eyebrow.
Nice. You should have took your blood from a stone picture and just had the. That would have been great social content for the show.
My wife was like, "You gotta spank him, or do the pull. You gotta let him know you can't do it." I was like, "I should have just like taken the blood and smeared it all over my face and screamed at him. I think that would have been a better look, Yeah, so we're recuperating over here. Good. I feel like I've worked in a main event match.
Well, you look like a million bucks as always, my friend.
Let's start without any Rene Paquette level preparation with the biggest matches of the weekend. Actually, I'm going to start with a question. Let's start with a down note. We'll get to an up note. Do you think the Pillars match / do you think the World Heavyweight Championship match from on one on each night. Do you think either of those matches should have headlined their shows just based on principle?
So I was thinking about this a lot, like as the night was going on. And I think that the choice was made, right? Like, I think in because it's an Anarchy in the Arena match and like the star power in it, I wasn't mad that it headlined and it had so much hijinks that happened. Like, agreed. It would have just been hard to follow. Like, not.
And props to MJF in the scrum afterwards for having a being ready to answer this question. He was like, "Do you think I want to wrestle in John Moxley's blood?" No.
I mean, it's a massively great point. You know what I mean? But I think we talked about this for a while. I think we all kind of felt like the buildup was a little weird and a little lackluster for a match that was supposed to represent, you know, the four biggest or the four next stars or the future of the company, however you want to shape it. But they put them in a great position to have this sort of conversation, which is, oh wow, these guys stole the show. These guys had an incredible match. I think no matter what the build was, we all knew once all four of them got in there, it was going to be an incredible match. And I really enjoyed it. The crowd was into it, and not for nothing, it woke the crowd back up.
I'm actually more upset about the Rollins AJ match. Like, I know that there's the philosophy is that if it amongst in some quarters is that if you're not going to close the show, it's, but you know, the next best spot is to open the show. But I think, I mean, I've defended, not like I'm a huge defender of this, but I've kind of defended every beat along the way, along the path to this match, crowning a new champion and, you know, a new belt, blah, blah, blah. There's a lot of people with a lot of skeptics out there. I've thought everything worked pretty well up to this point, but I still think on Night of Champions, crowning the first ever new world champion, maybe that should have gone last. You know, just maybe it should have felt like a bigger deal.
I don't know.
And by the way, I'm all about the Anarchy in the Arena going last. I thought it was watching the show. I thought it was kind of dumb that they had the unsanctioned match on the same card, and it was not really any more. I mean, it was certainly less grisly than the Anarchy in the Arena match. But like, logically and philosophically, I get the idea, setting that aside, I get the idea of the no holds barred match that we're not sanctioning goes after the last match that we sanction, right? It's just like, you know, we're only taking credit to the first 90% of the show. Whatever happens after that, we wash our hands of it.
Gotcha.
But, you know, I mean, you can't deny that the Bloodline Sami KO match was the biggest match on the card, the biggest match of the weekend, probably. Yeah. And the post match was so huge that it would have been hard to move that around. I just don't know if going first was the look for that AJ Seth match.
I'll tell you this. I think the reason the Seth AJ match went first is because, yes, it is Night of Champions, but at the same time, it is. I always want to see the last match be the most emotionally taxing match, because we've seen so many times where the crowd is just so spent afterwards.
Oh yeah.
That, you know, they had literally nothing left to give, and like, these two guys are killing each other. Nobody really cares that much, right? So, I mean, I think with the Anarchy in the Arena match and the tag team title match at Night of Champions, both of those had such emotional crescendos that anything that would have came after that would have been looked at as, oh, I don't know. I don't know if that was the best idea. I understand on the wrestling sort of, in the wrestling fans' mind, where if you're the world champion or you're about to be a new world champion, you should always go on last. That should be the last picture we see, someone holding up the world title, and that's the most important thing on the show. But I feel like both of these companies were in such a unique position to deliver on emotionally invested stories that I think you would have been doing Seth, AJ, and the Pillars simultaneously. And I guess Adam Cole and Chris Jericho, no real favors by putting them after a match that had something that made people so invested in it, they feel like, oh my God, what's next, right? Like, I don't watch Being the Elite, but, you know, and I don't follow as much of the YouTube show, but the people who do, that Takeshita reveal at the very end is just as much of an emotional investment to some people as, you know, the Usos. I mean, Jimmy Uso kicking Roman Reigns, right? Like, there's those things where after that, and I guess even for the commentators too, you know, like, in just the way the story's being told, after that, you want to be able to have a cliffhanger and give people a reason to watch Monday or Wednesday or Friday. Like, if you have a new champion, I'm excited for the new champion and it's going to be great, but cliffhangers are cliffhangers for a reason. And if the biggest cliffhanger doesn't have to do with a singles title, especially if it's A, going to somebody that we all long suspected was going to win in Seth Rollins. And for MJF, we all long suspected he wasn't going to lose the title to any three of these guys. I think they were both put in the perfect position to have great, great showings. And I think they did that.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I agree. So let's start with the runner-up matches. Let's go through it just a little bit.
Okay.
Seth AJ, I thought was a really fantastic match. Like I said, placement aside, I thought it was really good. But and I got to tell you, as much of an AJ proponent as I had been along the way, as soon as Seth came into the arena with everybody singing along, I mean, that's your champ, right?
Yeah,
there.
Yeah, yeah. It only had to be him. I mean, just reading the context clues, obviously, from the Marvel stuff to the video packages to all the promos that Seth and Triple H has said about why this championship is even being created. It almost didn't. It would have made sense for AJ to win it, but it also didn't make sense since he was just coming back. And storyline wise, unless you were starting something completely new, probably didn't make the most sense to put the title on him. But he's over as fuck, man. Like, this is like this third or fourth time in his career, he's massively over with a completely different sort of character. Mm-hmm. And this is probably the most he's had to do without any real gold around his waist. So I think, I know we spoke about it last time out. But you got to build more trustworthy competition for Roman. And the fact that Seth is as hot as he is right now, and now he has this new world title that he's probably going to defend either every week or every other week or mm-hmm. on all the PLEs and all that type of stuff, it's only going to elevate him more to where people are going to say, I want to see those two go at it one more time. And I think mm-hmm. that was the whole goal this entire time. But I thought it was great.
Yeah, I'm normally against it, but even if they had started kept the order, I mean, I know the bloodline stuff's just so significant. I was gonna say I would almost have gone for a completely substance free champion versus champion stare down at the end or something, just like have Seth come out and rub it in Roman's face, just tease for a year from now or something. But I agree. I mean, it was a hell of a match. AJ, I'm not sure that he needs a full Met Gala style, leopard skin entrance outfit like Seth has right now, but he needs a little extra something. New tights, maybe a little bit less of a trimmed down mustache. I don't know. Just give me a little something new with AJ.
Dave, do you do the spouse test when you're watching?
Sometimes, Dom wasn't watching with me this time because I was watching late at night.
I'll tell you this: AJ failed the spouse test, yo.
Tell me more.
So as soon as she came on, my lady, the first thing she said was, "This man's still wearing the same blue tights, same long hair, nothing different." Like, she knows Seth, mm-hmm. Rollins, and she's seen a lot of the different iterations of him. But he came out, did the song, did the hair flip, had the same blue tights, and I'll watch it with my lady, and she was like, "Oh man, AJ's still doing the same stuff." So if she notices it, then obviously a lot of people are going to notice that. So I don't know if she passed the spouse test after that match. We all kind of knew that this was Seth Rollins's crowning moment.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. It was a really good match, and I don't want to take anything away from it. It was, I would say, if you want to compare it to the other match that didn't get the main event billing, I prefer the Four Corners match. That was a hell of a match. I mean, I called it, but I get to take no credit for how good that match was. Those four guys came out. They knew, like you said, they had a tough spot. They had to wake that crowd up. Everything that had kind of come before, the first half of the Double or Nothing show was a little bit hit and miss. There was no real narrative arc to the overall thing to get the crowd going. And a lot of kind of schmozzy finishes and stuff like that. Those four dudes came out and just killed it. Just absolutely killed it. And I was expecting a lot, but man, I was impressed every step of the way. I thought Sammy, congratulations to dad to be Sammy Guevara. I thought he looked particularly spectacular through the whole match. There are a bunch of good moments in the match. The spot where they all hit their mentors' finishers in
that
a row.
That was tight. That was tight. I love that.
Yeah, I mean the whole thing with the only thing is when MJF pulled the thing on Sammy, or he was like, "You got a baby on the way, dude. Just lie down. Just take the bag of money or whatever." Yeah. I thought that was a cool spot. But then the rest of the match, I was just like, and I don't think I was the only one. I was like, "Oh, now who's gonna is Jungle Boy's gonna turn and take that money?" Like I thought that was the opening for like a surprising Jungle Boy heel turn, whatever finish or something.
Okay.
But anyway, there's that. Oh, the Spanish fly onto MJF and Jungle Boy, like to the outside of the ring. I mean, there were some just incredible moments in this match. And I thought MJF came out looking, you know, he looked good. He looks like, I mean, this is MJF's one of these dudes who between every big show, you forget that he can wrestle. That's sort of his gimmick. You know, he comes out, he surprises you. But also, it's like, it's not just that you remember that he can wrestle. It's walking out of these matches, he feels like a champ.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he feels like as big as he could be. And then, you know, sometimes the build isn't always as good. This episode is brought to you by eBay Motors. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED highlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Yeah, so the Four Pillars match I thought was excellent because of, you know, us going in thinking that it was going to deliver just mm-hmm. physically. I've gotten to the point where I'm less surprised at how good an MJF is, right? Like, he might wrestle 3 times in 2 months, but every time he does, he bumps his ass off. He has the crowd in the palm of his hands. He does the freak, like, he's just so cerebral with everything he does. And you can tell he's never really putting himself in real, true physical harm because the value in being a guy like him is being available all the time. And he doesn't take unlike his three counterparts, like he takes the least necessary risks physically on his body, you know? And, you know, we could say what you want about everything that has gone on with his reign, but out of all of the people on the roster, he's the most championship ready. You know what I mean? Like, he's the one that looks the most like a big deal. And that's everybody in the company, right? Like, he still sounds like he looks like a big deal, even though he didn't main event the show down to the entrance. I mean, he looks like he gains 20 pounds of muscle every time I see him. And the match itself told a great story just about their history in AEW. Like, if you love Easter eggs, you mentioned, you know, all four of those guys using, you know, the Crossroads, the Scorpion Death Drop, the Codebreaker, and the Unprettier, you know. And then there was the moment where, you know, that they all had 4 simultaneous submissions on each other. And, you know, it was just really well put together. And mm-hmm. I really enjoyed the match. And the finish was very, very clever with the coffin drop onto the title and Jungle Boy being, you know, I like to call them sting faces, like just the stupid sting faces when you're just like,
oh yeah,
dude, no, you won't even be a heel if you use a title in the no disqualification 4-way match. Like, the ref is looking dead at you. It's not like you need to sneak this in. It's just, you know, I guess your own personal, you know, morals,
code of ethics,
yeah, why you wouldn't do it. So I All that being said, it all made perfect sense. I think it was enjoyable. I was with Andreas Hale watching the match and West Side Gunn and Shaheem Reed. And we couldn't stop saying how much fucking we love Sammy Guevara and how amazing Sammy Guevara would be if he was like El Guevara and had a mask on, because he has such a punchable face that it's hard to root for. Like, even like when he came and announced the pregnancy, there was still like a smattering of boos in the crowd, or it's just like, all right, but he's just so talented in the ring and just probably one of the smoothest high flyers I've ever seen. It's like if there's he's in the small room of just elite high flyers in the game. It's like him, Ricochet, Rey Fénix, and Commander are just, they could do anything in the sky, and it's enjoyable. I've definitely started to come around more on Darby Allin as well. I thought he played his role to perfection. But yeah, at the end of the day, MJF did what MJF did. It was great.
I thought low-key, one of the big wins of this Four Pillars feud is to bring, like, everybody's got like two pillars they're in on and two pillars they're not quite in on. And I feel like this feud did a good job of sort of like bringing the pillars you're not, like bringing people around on the pillars they're not in on. Does that right. make sense?
Yes. Yes.
I think like everybody came out of this match just like, nah, I like all these guys now. All right. Now we see where we go forward. I mean, I assume MJF just moves on from all this stuff now and maybe a couple of the other pillars just start feuding or something. But it was fun. You know, it was a really, really good match. Not a great build, but we're talking about this weekend, so this feud is amazing. It was really, really good. Now, on to the big, big finish matches.
Mm.
Let's start with Anarchy. Do you want to take a few minutes to talk about the guy playing Wild Thing and what seemed to be blackface to start the segment?
So let me tell you, right? Like, I'm watching rehearsals, and I'm like, oh, okay. I'm like, all right, they got a band here. They're practicing Wild Thing. I'm remembering last day. I'm like, oh, it's going to be even doper. Like, instead of just playing the song throughout the match, it's going to have a live band, like, playing this shit. I was like, it was tight. And imagine my shock when I'm looking, and I'm not close enough to know if it's either blackface or a mask.
Well, nobody really was. That was very strange. I mean, even the cameras didn't make it super clear.
Yeah, it was. I didn't know what it was. But it was. I don't know if I'd go all the way with calling it blackface. But why run the risk? Why run the risk? Why do it? Like, there was a perfectly good rehearsal without it. Like, I wouldn't want people talking about it or even questioning if I'm even a smidge might have some sort of bigotry in me or do something that might take away from what the main event is. But in any case, it was such a fun match. I got to sit like after I did everything, I got to sit like right in the madness of it all. Cause I saw rehearsals, so I knew where all the action was going to go. I'm like, all right, I'm going to plop right here, because right when the match kicks off, like, Nick Jackson's going to be here. Matt Jackson's going to be here. They're going to slide down this hand railing down the T-Mobile Arena, and it's just going to be violence everywhere. So it was super fun. And in a weird way, I don't know. Like, aside from the very ending of the match, the Blackpool Combat Club still doesn't really strike me as, like, heels yet. Like, I think Don Callis kind of puts them over the top as the heels. As soon as he came out and they played that music, and, you know, even the promos leading up to it, Jon Moxley just being saying, like, yo, we're everything that these people pretend to be. And this is all the stuff that people cheered loudly for, you know, before they focused their attention on the Elite, right? So I still wasn't, like, all the way convinced this is a heel babyface match. This is just, these are your five or eight biggest stars on the company right now. That's just going to have an anything goes, falls count anywhere type of deal. But that being said, man, I came back super impressed with Wheeler Yuta. I know Kenny Omega is always going to do Kenny Omega things, but I think he wasn't the dude that really stole the show, in my opinion. I think Hangman came out looking like the most badass out of everybody. I mean, Matt and Nick Jackson, the the pyro, the superpowered kick, whatever it was. I don't know what it was.
The exploding super kick?
The exploding super kick. I think it was there was a lot of people that was on the fence off if it was cool or not. I thought it was awesome.
I thought it looked great.
I think the Young Bucks don't get enough credit for being as tough as they are. Like, we were doing the pre-show and everybody was clearly like, you know, this is a match that favors the Blackpool Combat Club. Brian Danielson and John Moxley have been in this match before. So they kind of have experience here, but the Bucks are hardcore, man. Like, they was going nuts. That multiple Northern Light suplex down the ramp was super fun.
Yeah, so nice.
I would have had so much more to say about the almost blackface that the lead singer of the band was saying if the Young Bucks didn't kick him in the face.
Yeah, you got his confidence.
That's a payoff right there. Even if it wasn't planned like that, I was like, okay, no one's going to talk about that right now because he got what was coming. But it was just such a fun match. I was looking forward to all weekend long, and it truly, truly delivered.
There were so many cool things in this match. It's impossible to run through them all. Just the weird, like, there are moments in any match like this where you wish they would. There's like, they're doing a split screen and you wish they would focus on one thing over the other, or like something happens totally off screen and you're confused. But I thought it all was great. I thought the anarchy in the presentation was really just beautifully done. There was a moment where they just cut to Claudio by the ring and like Rick Knox, the referee, was bleeding and nobody knew why. And it was just like, what the hell, John? Later on, John Moxley has like pulls out the fork and he's like, and after a barbed wire spot, he's covered in blood already. He pulls out a fork and then they go to split screen because Claudio is like doing the giant spin out in the concourse. Like, you know, it's just like, there's just so much stuff going on. And then the ending, with, you know, Callis coming in and then the Keshta run in, I thought was just really, really well done. And when you saw
the 10 out of 10 pose, by the way, the mask off and the pose into the camera, I was like, oh, that's a pose, right? That's a heel pose right there. That was great.
Yeah. Somebody online said, just imagine if that had been Punk. And you're like, well, okay. That's the only problem with the mask. The only problem with the mask is when it's the guy that you expect it to be, then what was the mask for? Yeah. I mean, I get like hiding your face as you're running into the arena or whatever. Like, in kayfabe, it makes sense to wear a mask. In reality, you know, when you're actually booking, it's like, yeah, it could just be Takeshita. Why not? We all kind of thought it would be him. But that was, the pose was great. And then the post-match pose with the whole combat club and then Callis in the back pointing, you know, pointing to Takeshita. They're together. Are they together? It's like, it's just giant. I mean, it was really, really well done. It looked really good. And then after the show, after it went off the air, Kenny got on the microphone and he said, I might have to bring in a friend or two to help even the odds. So I don't know who these friends are. I thought he had all his friends are right there. If he had other friends this whole time, they probably could have helped him out at some point prior to now. But a lot of people are making guesses. Who do we think these friends are?
I mean, Forbidden Door is the next big event for AEW. So, I mean, if it's not Kota Ibushi, if it's not Okada, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like those would make, like, those are friends or people that Kenny's had relationships with, people that would make sense to have at the at the NGPW AEW crossover show. I think that's where they're going with it. I think now they're starting to pepper in and sprinkle in some New Japan talk. You know, MJF was talking about it in the press conference, calling them an indie fed and saying like the best guy that they got over there couldn't lace my boots or whatnot. So I feel like that's the direction that they're probably going to go next. Just to add to the fact of the madness of the match and just what was going on. Like, I think on TV, I didn't get to see it on TV yet, but I got it in the arena, right? Like, in the arena, it felt like the Anarchy in the Arena match is fun as hell for the live crowd because it feels like everybody in the crowd gets a ringside seat for at least 10 seconds, right? Like, everywhere in the arena, you are at least this close to somebody in the Blackpool Combat Club or the Elite for at least 10 to 15 seconds. So, like, it's so smart. The music being playing throughout, like, just adds to the madness of it. You know what I mean? And you know, watching it on the big screen, like I did see that part when it went to the split screen and all of a sudden, like Claudio is just giant swinging somebody by the concession stand or whatever. And then, you know, there's a fork being stabbed into Omega's head by Moxley. It was just fun madness and carnage and violence. And I think it's not over yet. I think, you know, with the Forbidden Door pay-per-view coming up soon, yeah, you could only expect some New Japan talent to come in and bolster the Elite's roster and friendship.
What if Kenny brings in that blow-up doll that he wrestled that one time? Is that, it's Kota Ibushi and the 9-year-old girl that he fought in like 2012 or whatever that was. She's got to be grown up by now.
No,
but that would be so great, man. I think Ibushi's it's the one everybody's expecting. But mm-hmm. at that other spot, man, if you're right, that could be nuts, man.
I think so.
That's a good look for Forbidden Door too. You know, you're not. I mean, it's nice to have a big champion match. Well, who's MJF facing at Forbidden Door?
Oh man, that's a good question. He mentioned their legends. So it may not be somebody who mm-hmm. is super active right now. Like it may be Okada, it may be Tanahashi, it may be, you know, one of those dudes. So I think Tanahashi MJF would be a sleeper banger if they ever got together. But the him using the word legend, let me know it's going to be one of those New Japan pillars, right? Like yeah. one of those guys. So we'll see how that works out.
We mentioned the exploding super kick. Did we mention the thumbtacks in the mouth spot?
The thumbtacks on the feet spot.
We've seen the bare feet thing before. I like the bare feet gimmick, but it was like he avoided. Was that was Nick, right? He avoided the barefoot on the thumbtacks, but then got his face dropped on the thumbtacks as a result, which I'm not sure if that was a good trade-off. I mean, the feet hurt, but come on.
Yeah, and the metaverse Jordan 1s that flew into the crowd and people were chanting, throw it back, just because dude's foot was just covered in thumbtacks. The crowd played a great role into that,
What did you think about Wheeler Yuta getting the pin?
Great. That was another thing that surprised me that I really enjoyed.
Of course, it surprised you. I think that surprised literally everybody watching the match.
Yeah. I mean, isn't that the point of him just being in this crew regardless? I mean, like between him and I guess to a much, much lesser extent, Adam Page, those are the guys that they've both been grooming to be top guys from them, right? The Blackpool Combat mm-hmm. Club was originally started to be like, hey, we're going to give all of our mentorship and this fierceness and this violence to this young lion. And if you can't give him moments like this that doesn't necessarily have to be a championship win or a big title win or something like that, but pinning Kenny Omega to end the pay-per-view,
giving him the moment, yeah,
is a huge moment for him. So I thought it was a great choice. It was a smart choice, because if I think the Elite won, I think everybody would have thought Wheeler Yuta would probably have to eat the pin, but right. him getting the pin was a nice flip on that.
This is my hot take on this one.
Okay.
I kind of feel like Wheeler Yuta, I'm not going to complain about him getting the pin. I kind of feel like him making the winning pin is just a corollary of him taking the pin, of him being there to eat the pin. It's like him getting the pin basically just meant that nobody else got the bragging rights.
Yes.
Right? Like we don't really know. We don't have a specific line that we want this feud to go in, because we're actually going to keep them feuding as units. So rather than give Moxley or Danielson a big pinfall victory over Kenny Omega, we'll just give it to the kid. Yeah, whatever. Yeah. Maybe we can use that in 3 years or something. I don't know. I that's probably not the way that I would have gone, but it's
fine. How would you have gone?
I just don't think it would have ever occurred to me, dude. I don't think it would have ever occurred to me to give Wheeler. Although, I mean, you'd have looked good. I probably would have. I mean, maybe would have gone with Claudio. You know, let him get some shine in that moment. If we're not going to go with one of the obvious ones, there's a lot of people involved in the match. I just thought there was so much schmoz, there was so much whatever else. It's like just let's have a big convincing, you know, give Bryan Danielson pins Kenny Omega moment. If you want to do so, just why not? But everybody came out of this looking great. I thought Matt Jackson was a huge star of the night, him taking, like, in that in-game segment. I mean, he just looked like a million bucks. kicking and eating.
The Marvel? Did you catch the Marvel sequence when Kenny Omega turned into Captain America, was throwing the trash can, and then Cesaro did the Winter Soldier and caught that? I was like, and he had the little Captain America knee pad on too. I thought that was a super fun spot. But you're right. Matt Jackson was kicking ass. That entire match was great.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, it was a really stupendous match. I mean, just really, really good. Love seeing all those guys out there and brawling and stuff. And now I'm excited to see what they do next. I mean, we said it last time, you know, we had a four pillars match, but these guys are the institutions of this company. You know, this is where people are going to line up and buy tickets them and that guy Phil from Chicago. But you know, it's a big deal. And I thought they really did a good job of this. Now over onto the other company. We had Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn defending the unified tag titles against Roman Reigns and Solo Sikoa, who Roman wanted to walk out with all 17 titles or whatever he would be up to if he won that. Mm-hmm. It was a really good match. It was a whole lot of fun. One of the coolest things, I mean, we've said it before, one of the coolest things about doing all these different international shows is just watching who gets the crowd behind them in some of these places. But dude, there was nothing more kind of like heartwarming than watching Sami Zayn getting the reaction from the crowd, both in the presser and at the event after boycotting, you know, Saudi shows for so long.
Whoever says pro wrestling can't help bring the world just a little bit closer together has never met Sami Zayn, bro. Like, we said it for weeks leading up to this pay-per-view. It's like, oh, well, they got to drop the titles, right? You know, Sami's not going to Saudi Arabia. He can't do that. And, you know, the more I educated myself on the relations between Syria and Saudi Arabia and how diplomatically things have changed since, WWE first started going over there, it only gave you more hope. And the fact that Sami is a massive star now, and he came out in a traditional clothing with the title on and speaking in Arabic in the pre-show to do the intros, and nobody really letting Mike Rome do an intro to that match. Yes, a lot of people were upset that the World Heavyweight Championship Tournament Finals wasn't the main event. But like I said earlier in the show, emotional payoffs are usually 10 times better than title payoffs almost all the time. And even though Sami didn't get his moment in Montreal, if you would have told me he would have been standing victorious in Saudi Arabia with two titles and looking down at Roman Reigns on top of the title, like, you can't tell me that's not just as satisfying an ending for Sami, short of, you know, him being the universal / heavyweight champion. It was heartwarming, man. Like, it was beautiful to see. Like, and you could tell how much it meant to him. Like, if you follow him on Instagram, he went to Mecca. Him and Mustafa Ali went to Mecca and did traditional prayers and did all that type of stuff. And a lot of times, man, it's bigger than wrestling. It's bigger than your titles. It's bigger than, you know, the booking decisions that you want to make, man. Like, you got to think how, if you love Sami Zayn, like you all convinced us we do from the first half of this entire year, this was his WrestleMania moment. Like, this is bigger than a WrestleMania moment to him. You know what I mean? Like, he performed, main evented, and won in a country that we probably didn't think he would be able to do, not talk less of 2 years ago, 1 year ago. So forget the quality of the match. Just those moments alone made sense for it to end the show and be the main event of that. Yeah.
It's true. They definitely earned it. And the match itself was really, really good. I mean, and the image, we'll talk about the ending in just a second, but the lasting image in that match is Sami Zayn up on the second rope, looking over Roman Reigns cowed on the floor after the match and holding up his tag team title.
You can't have these. That was the line right there, which I love.
Yeah. And Michael Cole's on there just like, this is the end of the empire. The whole thing, you know, this entire, well, I'm guessing they'll find a way to string it out for another, you know, six or 8 months or something. But yeah. So anyway, the bloodline, as it were, seems to be fractured anew. During the match, the Usos came out and super kicked Sami, and, you know, we're working the pro bloodline angle, only to accidentally double super kick Solo Sikoa. Roman Reigns gets involved. He's like, get out of my ring. He's you know, punking out Jay, and then Jimmy of all people comes in with the super kick. Jay's like, "What are you doing, dude? We've been here before. This is like a bad dream we're having over and over again." And then he's like, "No, I'm your brother. I would never do that to you. You know, I would never treat you like that. I'm doing what you should have done months ago," which was the real poignant line.
And he did him the favor of not doing it for him. He's like, "Don't worry, I got you." And then that second super kick was the one. Like, the first one was like still kind of, I don't know. But for the fourth pay-per-view in a row, a spot wasn't the biggest spot. Mm-hmm. Dialogue was the biggest spot. Right? Yeah. And, you know, Jimmy telling Jay, like, "You're my brother. I would never do you like that. I would never do him like that. And you know what? I'm going to do what you should have done a long time ago. I got you." And then kicks him again and gives him that look. I was like, "Ooh, ooh." And the fact that he said, "I would never do you like that," too, also leaves a little crease in the door, in my opinion, for what I think should be the main event at SummerSlam.
You know? Which is what?
Which is an Uso in every corner for the WWE Universal Championship. Solo, Jimmy.
Wait, a four corners match?
Four corners, Bloodline explodes.
Okay, so the rumors coming out, there's been a lot of different rumors in different directions, but the rumors that I heard, that I trust coming out of Night of Champions, was that they're going to shotgun a Usos versus Solo and Roman match for Money in the Bank.
Okay, in the UK.
So that we can just, you know, get that done. And then that one, I think the idea being that Roman gets a straight up championship defense at SummerSlam. But it's unclear who that would be. If they don't go the route of someone within the Bloodline getting the shot, I mean, are there any comers on SmackDown that would make sense to work on a show that big?
Yeah, I mean, it's London. So, I mean,
you can do Drew.
There's Drew lurking in the bushes. You know what I mean? Who hasn't really done anything.
Is he on SmackDown now? I don't even remember.
I don't know. But he's been lurking long enough that it wouldn't shock me if he popped up and he helps, you know, main event Money in the Bank against Roman. You know, there's a whole lot of, there's a new cast of characters that I don't think Roman has even touched on yet. Obviously the AJs of the world, the Bobby Lashleys, all those guys. But if you're not doing
it, they should have AJ just do like the King Booker gimmick now. They got to do something with him. Just have AJ start speaking in a British accent and try to get over with the UK fans just for that show.
Country ass, Georgia ass AJ Styles in a UK European accent would.
He did win the WWE title there.
Yeah, that is true. He did. There's something there. Beat my man Jinder for the world title.
SummerSlam, but SummerSlam's in Detroit. So who do you think it's going to be? Roman versus in Detroit?
If it's a solo match, I mean, I could see a world where we get back to Roman versus Cody too. Before WrestleMania, I could see that possibly happening. But I just think with less
Cody's going to run out of things to the injuries to have during the match.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
To propel the storyline.
He passed out from a broken arm, which I didn't know you could do, but I mean, he did it.
First of all, let's talk about that match. But first, let's give a shout out to Ilja Dragunov, who may have actually broken his arm during his match and kept going. I don't know what happened to that guy, but the pictures, if you haven't seen them, look online. The pictures of his left forearm just look like he got run over by a tractor.
Yeah. That's a madman right there. I love me some Dragunov.
Yeah, so Cody and Brock, it was a fun little match, you know? I mean, it was kind of exactly what you would expect. Yeah, sometimes we had those like Brock squashes and you're like, you know, the counterintuitive argument was like, actually, that's exactly the Brock match that I want, yes. You know, like whatever. But, you know, this was pretty much the Brock match that I want. A little bit longer. We got the nice reversals. He actually looked like Cody could like hurt him. You know, that part of it was cool. And you know, Cody looked good. But Cody, I swear to God, they're going to give Cody another like career-threatening injury in every big match just to sort of to up the stakes. By the time he gets back in the ring with Roman Reigns, he's going to be like the Tin Man or the, whatever. That was fun. And Cody ends up passing out, doesn't actually quit. He gets but he loses the match. Referee stoppage. It feels to me, I don't know if we're looking at Money in the Bank or what, but it feels to me like this is that Brock is getting shined up for a Seth Rollins match.
I think so. I think so. It wouldn't shock me if Brock Lesnar was the first person to put Seth on his ass after this big celebratory moment. Brock Lesnar has sort of turned into like the main event gatekeeper now, right? Like after this Roman trilogy, you call it, or quintilogy, that ended last year's SummerSlam. It almost seems like you can't make your way up back to the big show without going through Brock. And I think that's kind of what happened with Cody. And I think as much as Seth has been shined back up, in the past year, Brock Lesnar is still the ultimate, he's the ultimate co-signer, right? Like if you could hang with Brock.
I mean, he's like the new Undertaker, basically. Yeah. He's the semi-main, He's like, and if he's not in the main event picture, then his match is always going to be huge.
Yes.
But now the question is like my whole kind of subliminal question going through this Cody Rhodes feud is like, is Cody just going to beat him? Like, I just looked at the window. I have a giant like yellow beach ball for my kids in the backyard that's just rolling on its own across the yard with the wind. I'm just like, what the hell is going on out there?
Fire up the charcoals in like 30 minutes myself.
What'd you say?
I said, I'm about to fire up the charcoals myself in about 30 minutes. I hear you.
I was like, is Cody just going to beat Brock Lesnar? Like, then what happens to Brock? That's sort of the problem with Brock. You can reheat him so easily, but at the same time, it is a big statement when somebody beats him. They threw him in there with Rollins. Rollins has got to win, right? Rollins has got to legitimize this reign. So how badly is Brock going to beat him on the way to losing to him to sort of validate Brock's continued existence? I don't know. It's an interesting balance they have to walk there. But that feels... right. And now Cody can, I don't know, does Cody need any more real life rehab, or is he just going to go chill by the pool for a little while? Not like drug rehab, but like he's not really injured.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we got to figure out what we're doing with him next too. I don't know. And there's a lot of big questions coming out of this. What do you do with Cody? What do you do with, what they're going to do with Seth, and we're fantasy booking Brock. What do you do? Here's a good one. What do you do with Bianca Belair? She just lost her women's championship to Asuka in a really cool spot where Asuka like had missed the mist mm-hmm. earlier in the match, but then got some mist on her fingers and did the old goo in the eye trick to get the win. It looked like Bianca was getting kind of upset throughout the course of the match. I don't know if this is a heel turn we're teasing, if this feud is going to be the one that does it. But what do you, I don't know. I mean, do you think there's a rematch is what we're going to get next? I mean, where do you think we go from here, feud-wise and character-wise?
I guess real life-wise, Bianca could use a break, right? Like, mm-hmm. she is, I mean, we see it all the time. Anytime we do anything WWE, Bianca Belair does every media event, does every Make-A-Wish. We call her John Cena for a reason. Like, she is literally taking the mantle as the flag bearer of the company outside of the WWE. Mentioned a bunch of times that Hulu show is dropping very soon. So it would make sense for her to kind of like go and promote that for a while. But as far as what she does next, I think a lot of people are projecting a heel turn for Bianca. And I don't think we're quite there yet, right? Like I think it's going to take a little bit more of, a little bit more seasoning, I would say, to really get Bianca into a place where she has to turn, change her attitude, right? But there's also a world where I don't know if the juice is worth the squeeze to turn Bianca heel. As much as me personally, I would love to see it just because I thought she was a great heel in NXT. And I think you'd be able to see a little bit more of her real personality if she gets to be, just a lot less smiley, happy-go-lucky all the time and could mm-hmm. be a little bit sharper and come back at people. And heels are cool anyway, and Bianca's cool as hell. So I think she'd give a nice new spin on what a female heel would be in WWE. But that being said, I don't think the time is right quite yet. I think you hold that heel turn until like a SummerSlam or a Survivor Series or, a nice when she has a nice road path or roadway to either the Royal Rumble or WrestleMania, I think that's when you make the turn. Because, yeah, she lost the title, but she's been champion for over a year. So she got some mist in the eyes. And, you know, I don't think that's enough for somebody to say, okay, fuck everybody who supports me. I'm going to go and do underhanded things to win my title back. But I think they'll get there. I think there's a lot of ways and opportunities and paths that you can get Bianca to kind of change her attitude a little bit. But I think a change is necessary, though.
Like, I
do think, you know, that she has done a lot with the, you know, smiley pink ponytail swinging, you know, EST sort of stuff, right? I think, you know, there's she's done a lot with that character, and there's little layers that I don't think she's even got to peel back yet because she's done it so well. So a lot of people thinking a heel turn is coming very soon. I would say let it cook for a little bit. Let that shit simmer like we let the Roman Reigns heel turn simmer, and then you'll see it pay off much more if that's the route you want to go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm excited for the potential for change.
Yes.
I think that we talked about it before. I think it's time, and I'm glad it was Asuka. I mean, Asuka's, I don't know if she's going to be able to hang on to that title for long, but she's a lot of fun. Mm. She's absolutely working at the peak of her powers right now. And man, I mean, what if it was a fun match? I love Asuka. And I hope that Bianca, I mean, ever since we started talking about Bianca and potentially the Street Profits alongside her working a little bit heel, I mean, that's got me intrigued. We've been fantasy booking this forever. Let's make it happen, WWE. Let's go have some fun, all right?
This episode is brought to you by NetSuite by Oracle. Things are expensive these days, especially for businesses, from the materials to distribution, borrowing, wages, everything costs more. That's why businesses are making the smart choice and graduating to NetSuite by Oracle, the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one platform and one source of truth. If you want to reduce costs and headaches, this is how you do it. It's never a bad idea to save money. Like right now, we got, you know, summer's coming up. Do you want to go away? Where are you going? Are you renting a place? You doing Airbnb? Going to a hotel? Need a little money for all that stuff. Why not try to save some money now? Over 37,000 companies have already made the switch. Do the math. See how much you'll profit with NetSuite, especially right now, because now through April 15th, NetSuite offering a one-of-a-kind flexible financing program. Head to netsuite.com/ringer. That's netsuite.com/ringer. This episode is brought to you by Major League Baseball. A lot is going on in the world of sports right now, but don't forget the 2024 baseball season. It's officially here. Some pretty exciting things to look forward to. Can the star-studded Dodgers, can they make the World Series? Can Mookie Betts break my heart again? How about the young Orioles? How about the defending champs, the Rangers, trying to become the first back-to-back champs in over two decades? See how far they'll go. Get in on the action by visiting your local ballpark or any ballpark, or you can just go to MLB.com, tap the banner to learn more. Baseball is something else.
And the other women's match, we got two other women's matches, the Rhea Ripley and Natalya match, kind of a squash, but the Becky Lynch Trish Stratus match, Trish wins with a little help from the outside. First of all, I just want to say Trish looked like Trish, like prime, like Trish in her prime.
Yeah. Somebody went and got her from the multiverse from 2001 and just dropped her into 2023 and didn't miss a single beat. She looked great.
Obviously, huge credit to Becky Lynch for helping that. I mean, for making that match look so good.
And I love how the Kill Bill outfit sort of like ties in with Saudi customs. It still looks badass and still looks cool and doesn't look like
all of the women looked great in their outfits. They finally figured that out.
Yes.
Now I wish the dudes would have to do it too. I wish there was like a pay per view a year where like all the dudes had to wear some very specific outfit just to see what the cool things they would come up with.
Yeah. It doesn't hurt that Bianca's like also like a master seamstress also. So like anything she cooks up is probably gonna look fire, but yeah, it's
I would have done a little bit more of the blue, like figure out a way to get more mist involved. If Bianca's going to be out there in the white, you know, rather than just have a few dots of mist, like that kind of got stuck on her back or whatever, just let's have her drenched in it.
Bianca's,
you know,
so good and talented. It wouldn't shock me if she like knitted up like a fucking windshield wiper for her face. like somebody like shoots mist at her and she just invents some like face side windshield wiper. What movie was that when they just had like the windshield wiper glasses? Was that like a Nickelodeon show or something? Was that like Inspector Gadget? I don't know. I forgot what it was.
almost certainly it was an Inspector Gadget at some point. Yeah. I know what you're talking about, though. I feel like, was that one of the, it was like a parody movie or something. Yeah. Oh, you know what it was?
I think it was Saved by the Bell. The dude that owned the Max. Remember the dude?
He had windshield wiper glasses,
I think. I'm pretty sure.
Also when DX had the windshield wiper face things when Sergeant Slaughter was the guy they were feuding with. That was.
You got to talk to Sean and Hunter and be like, yo, those windshield wipers, what can I do? You still got those?
the only match from Night of Champions we haven't discussed is Gunther versus Mustafa Ali. Ali was just over like crazy.
Over like Rover, man. He was great.
The crowd was going absolutely nuts. This was like just the most perfect distillation of, you know, the scrawny baby face against the big monster heel, with the crowd totally living and dying on every near pin.
Oh, speaking of the crowd, can I get my hot take off now?
Go.
I think the Saudi crowd is the top five wrestling crowd in the world, yo.
Wow.
They go nuts for everything. Mm-hmm. They are invested in every fucking thing that they do when WWE comes over there. I put the Saudi crowd up there with the New Yorks, the Chicagos, the UKs, that type of, like, and I know obviously with everything that goes on, you can feel how you feel about the politics of it all, but just sure. the fans, the way they're invested in people who have zero investment in the United States. Mansoor was like Stone Cold Steve Austin for like 3 years over there. Like Ali, who, you know, hasn't won a match of importance since WrestleMania like 4 years ago for the Cruiserweight title. Over. You know what I mean? Like everybody who came out, like Seth Rollins, over. Like they are engaged. I love those shows. I love that it's in the afternoon, too, so we could watch it in the middle of the day and go about the rest of our day.
I love those afternoon shows.
I love the Saudi crowd, man. They are locked in on every single person. They're invested in everybody. There's no bathroom breaks for them. Like they are excited for everybody. It's weird. It's awesome.
It's true. And Ali looked incredible, too. I mean,
he is incredible. He is.
But he made the most of that moment, and hopefully better things will come of it for him.
I think so.
There's going to be a pretty interesting reset on Raw tonight, just to see where a lot of these characters go. I mean, obviously on SmackDown this week, too, we'll have a lot more bloodline storyline payoff.
Feels like the draft was like the soft reset. And like now this week is like, okay, now this is a new show. Right. So
there may be some more call ups. I mean, there may be some more NXT folks showing up on the main roster now. We can whiz through a little bit of Battleground, but it wouldn't shock me if, dude, half the people on this card ended up on the main roster. You know, I mean, in the very near future, whether it's the Creed brothers, whether it's Braun, you know, like even like Dragunov, you know, whatever, like you, like if he's arm permitting. I mean, I think there were a lot of cool things. And there were a lot of really good looks in the show. Tiffany Stratton is your new NXT women's champion and just looks about as good as she possibly could.
Mm-hmm.
Great match. Dragunov, as mentioned, just won that last man standing match and just brutalized himself in the process. He's sort of like the Ja Morant of wrestling, where it's just like we're not talking about guns here, where it's just like at every opportunity. I was like,
we're not talking about Arn Anderson right now.
No, it's like at every opportunity, Ja Morant just throws himself towards the rim at like 200 miles an hour, you know, and you're just like, okay, maybe we could just work on a fallaway jumper or something.
Maybe a floater works. A floater works, you know.
Just something to keep you from being in like a highly leveraged, like dangerous situation every five minutes of the game.
Yeah.
Dragunov only knows one speed, man. And it's like self-sabotage, but it's incredible to watch.
God. Those UK dudes, those NXT UK dudes, like, I don't think there's a single one of them that I'm not massively impressed by at every single premium live event. Mm-hmm. Even Noam Dar and Dragon Lee
were Noam awesome. Noam Dar was so cool. His little crew that he's got now looks like it's going to be a lot of fun.
Jakara Jackson, Lash Legend.
Yeah,
that's going to be really fun as well to see where that goes. But yeah, back to Ilya. He's a guy that I could totally see, you know, given Gunther that work. I mean, if we're talking about eventually moving Gunther into world title consideration, which makes the most sense, I think, soon enough. And the fact that you have a world heavyweight champion now, your mid-card's kind of back. So if there's a guy that I think takes the title off of Gunther very soon, I mean, who's against Ilya Dragunov showing up on Raw one night and challenging for the Intercontinental title?
Well, there
and
were rumors for a while that he might join Imperium, which is sort of interesting. I'm not quite sure if that's the best look for him. But as you were saying that, it did occur to me, what if, you know, Gunther is like made the IC title so meaningful? What if he like bestows it on somebody when he's ready to move up instead of losing and moving on? What if it's like a member of Imperium or just someone who's wrestling who he has enough respect for that he's just like, you've earned this.
You've kept the ring sacred. Yeah. Just, you know, and he's beat him
before.
It's
like the end of a video. It really is. It's just like you've accomplished your goal. Here's your prize.
That could be interesting. That could be an interesting Imperium story. Instead of bestowing it on, Fabian or the other one. I forgot. What's the other one's name? The one that does the intro?
Marcel.
Yeah, Marcel and Fabian. It would be hilarious if he was just like, Ilya Dragunov, the last person to pin my shoulders to the mats. Here you go. And now you're part of Imperium. And now these guys are just like, dude, what about so, like, that could be interesting.
Now you listen to him. It's now you listen to this guy.
Yeah.
Speaking of being impressed, you know who impressed me on this show?
Oh.
Braun freaking Breaker.
He's back. He's got his mojo back, man. Like
He worked a good match, man. He looked like the ring general. No Imperium reference.
Well, he's got the most main event experience out of anybody in NXT roster. I mean,
We always talk about how Melo had more ring experience than him. I mean, from the start, you know, Carmelo had been wrestling for 7 years or something before he showed up in Florida.
Right.
I mean, Braun really looked like the experienced dude in this match at times. He looked really, really good. And that spear that he got off the, I mean, that there, there was, is he, and we don't really do spear rankings in WWE, but man, he might have the best spear.
He's definitely climbing up the ranks for sure. For sure. I think we said this a few months ago just how I just thought Braun Breaker got boring and, you know,
and
he was right. Like, I think this is all in preparation for what he is now though. Right. Like I felt like, earlier in this run, all those main events with Ziggler and all the other guys that came down from NXT, from WWE and, you know, working all those main events at these NXT events has prepared him to be that sort of ring general now. And I think that heel persona that he's taken on since, NXT Stand and Deliver was right on time. It fits more to what I think he should have been. But again, you don't know how much you need something until you've lived without it for so long, right? And babyface Braun, which established him as a hell of a worker, made him a little boring. And right at the moment where people were starting to get tired of him and sick of him or whatever, and just ready for him to move on to the main roster, now you're just like, oh, okay, he could probably stick around for a little bit as this badass heel. But, you know, now losing two NXT title matches in a row to Carmelo Hayes, I think now that's all up in the air. Who knows where he goes from here? But he's really impressed me lately in this heel run. He's been awesome. He's SmackDown ready now, I think.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think that the issue with them is going to, I asked you last week if he's going to be called up as a babyface or a heel, because my assumption was that they would call him up as a babyface to rework the heel turn gimmick, basically, right?
Okay.
Because it's like it worked once, like it's got him to the good spot. We're just going to put him in put him as a babyface. We can fast track a turn, etc. Now I'm worried that if he gets called up as a heel, he's going to be too over to be a heel. Like, it's kind of crazy. I don't know.
Sure. I can see him being called up for somebody being somebody's muscle. I can see him being being a surprise, you know, something, you know, but what do you think?
He's not that big, dude. He's not actually that big.
Well,
on
not
the main
muscle,
roster.
Not muscle in the sense of like imposing, but like a hired gun, a mercenary. Something like that, you know what I mean? Somebody just come and just get
sure.
kick somebody's ass. But who knows? Who knows? I don't know where they go from here now. That's the one thing. I don't necessarily see him going back down the card, and I don't necessarily know any blood feuds.
No, I think
he
it's time for the main. I think it's definitely time for the main roster for him. I'm just interested. I just don't know who it's going to be. I mean, I just don't. I mean, like where it's going to be, or you know how they're going to actually do it. So I'm intrigued. I'm intrigued for sure.
Does an Austin Theory Bron Breakker feud tickle your fancy for the U.S. title?
Say it again.
Does an Austin Theory Bron Breakker U.S. title feud tickle your fancy?
Yeah, sure. I didn't really think about it. That's got me. I'm more interested in that than I think a lot of the things that you can do with that title.
Or Bron Breakker as Austin. I feel like Bron and Austin Theory are just kind of like gonna be involved somehow. Like he's either gonna
with
be
with each other.
With each other. They're either gonna be rivals or like he's gonna become like, you know, Austin Theory's little like little Dolger, right? Like go and handle my light work type of dude. And I don't know. They kinda it fits to me for some reason. You know?
Yeah. They look like dudes who would like, you know, they're go both on under spring 25. Break together.
Yeah, they both hit the gym super hard. You can tell they're going to do mad push-ups for each other and like, you can't do two. I'll do 200 push-ups, bro. And they just fucking, you know what I mean? Do those little quick shits.
It's like when you're in Brooklyn, when you live in Brooklyn and like on a Memorial Day weekend, you go outside, you realize that the neighbors are already cooking out and you're like, oh, cool. Maybe we can share. And you look over the fence and they got their shirts off, you know, and you're just like, oh, I don't think our parties are going to go. I don't think our parties are going to mix. Here,
oh, it's,
you know?
It's one of those nights. Oh, okay. All right. I'll just stay here. I'll watch.
I could see that. I think you gotta, especially if you're gonna work heel. I don't know. I just feel like there's a darkness to Braun that they really gotta push. Not just the heelness. I feel like there's a darkness to him, and I don't mean like he's got to go full like House of Black, but like there's, I don't know. I think there's more room there. There's more for them to mine.
I think
it'll be interesting to see what they do.
I think you could kill two birds with one stone doing Braun Breakker and Austin Theory. Austin Theory as accomplished as he is, a lot of people really don't give a fuck about him. And I think it's because he's, as much as he just kind of talks.
I think it's because John Cena won't stop talking shit about him.
Well, that too. But I think, you know, I think he needs a heater. I think Braun would be a great heater for Austin Theory. And
it would be fun to do a heat, to get those two guys. You do Austin Theory, Braun, maybe if you get one more person and just do like a new blood angle. Just like we're like taking out all you old timers,
yeah,
sort of stuff.
Like something along the lines of, I think it works because he's already the U.S. champion. He could come in, Braun could come in and sort of protect that title for him long enough to where it's like, oh, we actually like this guy Braun more than Austin Theory, right?
Yeah.
Like his offense is way more aesthetically pleasing. He's going to be spearing people through the fucking ring for him. And it's going to happen long enough where Braun's kicking so much ass. He's like, you know what? Nah, I want your title. And now you give a fuck about Austin Theory and you get Bron Breakker into something that sort of makes people interested in him, whether he's a heel or a babyface. So I don't know. I could see them going that way if that's the route they take after this feud.
Yeah. Or just have maybe Dolph Ziggler starts a new version of Legacy where it's just multiple generations of dudes with eight packs. And it's that's what they have in common.
Well, they got to call it Abolution. Abolition is a mystery. Bunch of crunches no one sees.
Done. Take it, man. Call call your boys right now. Call them Abolution.
Get the trademark ready, baby. I need my 10%. Abolition.
Oh God.
Who would be the old guy in Abolition? It would be like Daddy Ass, right? Like you'd have to call Billy Gunn.
You can get Billy Gunn back.
Just be like, yo, we got this thing. We know this acclaim thing is doing really well. But hear me out, yo. Abolition. Just the different eras of Dolph Ziggler.
Oh my gosh. Who is the oldest dude with abs?
Oh gosh. I mean it's gotta be Daddy Ass, right? Like he's 60 next week. He's turning 60. He said he's 60 years old. Let me double check that. I'm almost pretty sure this man is in the AARP.
Does Bob Backlund, you think Bob Backlund's got some abs under there? He's like an old guy who's still in shape. Could we get him out here?
He's in pretty good shape. He's in pretty good shape. Yes, Billy Gunn is 59 years old. Oh my God. Yeah, he wins. Get him in there. Get him an Abolution. Sell the shirts. And it's just like crop tops too, right? Like it's just fucking, it's just Ezekiel Elliott type shirts. And everybody just walks around with their belly out, just like washing clothes on each other's stomach. Annoying the fuck out of people.
God, this is a fantastic idea. We gotta Edge could be part of Abolution, right? He's got some abs now.
He's got some abs.
Like old man abs.
He's got some old man abs. There's a little flab around there, but you let that rock when you're at that age. Like I see.
No, we gotta find the right dude. Maybe
what about Kurt Angle? Yeah. Kurt Angle's in there. Kurt Angle's still kind of ripped.
Well, I was actually thinking Kurt, but he's not abs forward. He's got the abs, but you don't just think of him and think of his abs.
Yeah, you're right.
I don't know. We gotta do some more thinking about Abolution, but this is definitely, this is definitely a winning idea.
Abolution. If they don't do it, I'll do it. Fuck it.
Let's run through the rest of Double or Nothing before we get out of here. Orange Cassidy retained the IC or the International Championship in the Battle Royal. It was a fun match. I mean, there were some cool spots in it. I think if the first half of the show had been a little bit better overall, I would have more, you know, loving memories of this match.
Oh,
I
wonderful like ending, last, by the way.
Yeah, I know. With Swerve doing the little like Wile E. Coyote grab. Yeah. I hope that we go to a OC Swerve feud after this because I think there's a lot of good times to be had there.
Oh, he kicked ass this weekend, man. Swerve is first off, he's put on like 20 pounds of muscle. Like he looks huge now.
Put him in charge of the dojo, man. There are a lot of guys on this show that don't seem to have gained a lot of weight in their time being full-time wrestlers.
Yeah. It's like Swerve and MJF are the only people that are like, oh yeah, I got a lift too. Mm-hmm. I thought their last back and forth between him and Orange Cassidy was great. I wouldn't mind them seeing him run it back for the international championship.
Love it.
I'd be dying.
The Cole Jericho match was sort of blah. It's apparently we're setting up a Saraya and Jericho versus Adam Cole and Britt Baker match for Dynamite this week.
Yeah, wasn't the biggest fan of that match. I thought it could have been a lot better. And I think the Sabu thing was a little random. Even though it was cool to see him put motherfuckers through tables for like 5 seconds, I was like, we could have lived without that.
Nah, I mean, I was just like it was cool. And then as soon as he did it, I was just like, dang, Sabu broke his ribs. Like he's too old to be doing that stuff.
Nah, he was good. He was kicking it back. He was kicking it like right after the match. He's great. It's fine.
Yeah, still no, got it's it. Good. After the FTR match against Jarrett and Lethal was a lot of fun, as expected. I really liked. Karen Angle hitting Aubrey Edwards with the guitar, I thought was, you know, obviously a highlight of the night for a lot of people.
That was great.
It was, you know, a cool like ref bump spot, very old school setup as one would expect for this match. And
hey, we could put Jeff Jarrett in Abolution. He might be. he might roll.
Not a bad idea. Dude, if only Rick Rude were still alive, he would be just a killer for
God
it.
God rest his soul. And shout out to everybody who sent me all the Rick Rude memes over the weekend. I appreciate those. Those are nice, nice touches.
Jamie Hayter lost her AEW Women's Championship to Toni Storm. We have a new champion. Hayter came into this match injured, both in real life and in storyline. She got beat up on the way to the ring and got beat up all along the way. You know, it was a good little match, whatever, but everything here was just seemed driven by the realities behind the match or the concept of the match or whatever. Not a lot of fun stuff. House of Black open call for the Trios Championship. I actually enjoyed this match a lot, but beat the Acclaimed and Daddy Ass. A bunch of cool little stuff worked out. Then Jade Cargo, you predicted she would lose, but you chose the wrong person that she was going to lose person. To.
Yeah, I felt like last night was going to be the night, but I definitely didn't see Chris Statlander coming.
Yeah, after Jade retained, Mark Sterling made an open call, and Chris Statlander made her shocking return from injury, and finally got that win that has been rumored since she blew out her ACL a year ago or whatever. So that was a cool moment. Another weird moment in AEW of the babyface sort of taking the the short path to the champion. I mean, I'm not just AEW specific, but it's always an easy thing to point at.
Yeah.
Taking the short path to the championship. But man, this card needed a moment up to that point. And it was really good to see Statlander back. And it's going to be a lot of fun to have her as champion.
I said the Four Pillars match woke up the crowd. The result of the Chris Statlander, Jade Cargo match was what really woke the crowd back up.
Definitely. Good call.
Yeah.
We got the Four Pillars match after that, which we discussed, and the Combat Club versus the Elite, going over the Elite, and the Anarchy match was the ending. I think we talked about just about everything that happened in over multiple shows this weekend. Brian, did we forget anything?
Wesley, the opener for NXT.
Oh, we didn't talk about that. Wesley retained. That was a really fun match, man. That had more. I mean, they do all these like multi-person matches. The triple threat match is just the perfect number of people to do like a wild match.
Yes.
If you really do it right.
It's like a spotter. It's like a spotter in a gym. Like you could lift by yourself, but if you got a really good spotter, you can get a great workout in. So that's why triple threat matches are usually fun.
What is Wesley now? Like the most successful title defenses by a North American champion?
Has to be. The Black Guy Championship, man. The North American NXT North American title has more black champions probably per capita in the history of wrestling. And Wesley is keeping that tradition going. So when they rename that the NXT North African Championship, it will be... it'll be very, very fitting. Like you get plus 10 XP points if you're a black guy holding that title. So you just can't fucking lose. It's awesome.
Oh, that's great. What were you going to say, Brian?
I was going to say what was so cool. So in a channel changing moment, like if this was the Monday Night Wars, you actually had Wesley and Swerve on the TV at the same time. If you remember when they was coming up, say like around 2017, down in WrestleMania 33 that weekend, they were putting on bangers. And just to see those guys at the high level on both companies, that was a moment right there.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, it's totally true. Yeah, I think that's it, guys. I think we actually made it through just about everything here.
Man, what an incredible weekend of wrestling. All 22 matches. I don't think I got to see all 22 of them, but God damn it.
You get to see some of them live. Yeah. You get to see enough, I'm sure.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Definitely.
Did anybody get a bigger reaction at Double or Nothing than the mention of Dominic Mysterio's name?
Yo, a Dominic chant broke out during the trios match. I was like, I don't know if that's what you wanted to do there with that bar, but
You don't have control over the reaction. You just got to let your bars out into the world and what happens, happens.
What happens, happens, man. But it was, yeah, it's crazy how popular Dominic is now. Insane. Insane.
I mentioned before that, you know, there's a lot of changes in store for Monday Night Raw tonight, right?
Yes, yes.
Most of the things that matter on Raw are new now, right? Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens are going to be on Raw with presumably nothing to do. I mean, nothing, you know, bloodline related to do. You know, they had a little beef with Imperium, I think, last week, and Matt Riddle is still hanging around. I saw some rumors of a Matt Riddle-Gunther feud potentially in the offing. But, you know, Brock Lesnar, what's he going to do? Cody Rhodes, is he going to be around or is he going to be recuperating? We have a new champion in Seth Rollins. Trish and Becky presumably is still an ongoing issue. What do we have? What are you looking forward to seeing what's going to happen the most tonight?
I'm looking forward to seeing if the World Heavyweight Championship is truly a fighting championship and, you know, what Seth does to kind of establish what it's going to be. Because, you know, AJ's on SmackDown. So if it's Brock, if it's somebody else that comes and works Seth, I'm going to be excited to see that. And I'm really excited to see how Asuka runs the women's division as the Raw Women's Champion, since Bianca is a SmackDown competitor. So those are two new champions with wide open dance cards right now to see who they're going to work with.
It would be
with.
Really great if Asuka, I mean, I'm sure they're going to go with a rematch situation with Belair, but it would be just refreshing if they didn't. Just let this be a hard reset, you know, or let Bianca Belair just be like, nah, I've got something else I care about more.
Yeah, she needs, she needs the rest.
I'll get my rematch when I'm ready for my rematch. Right now, I'm just going to do something else.
Yeah,
I mean, that would at least be intriguing.
Oh gosh, Seth, and we got Money in the Bank qualifying matches this week, so that's exciting. This week.
Yeah, I think they said the women's are starting next week, but the men's are starting this week.
We got Montez Ford and LA Knight and Zelina Vega and Military Girl. What's her name? Lacey Evans. Lacey Evans are the first.
LA Knight versus Montez Ford is the first match.
First qualifying match.
I mean, it's got to be Montez, right? But then when you do LA Knight, LA Knight was so over in Saudi that they almost gave him a match.
I don't know. Like, LA Knight is, he's got that momentum. He's been turning into one of those dudes where it's like, we're not ready for you to be this hot yet because we don't really have anything for you, but the crowd is going to start forcing their way into making it. It wouldn't shock me if LA Knight, I think he should be the first competitor in the Money in the Bank.
Maybe Montez loses and now the power couples on a losing streak together.
True. That could be that. I'm sure there's also opportunities for like a last chance qualifying match for those type of things. Cause I don't know why you wouldn't have a Money in the Bank match without Montez in it, especially after the Elimination Chamber this year. So we'll see.
Yeah. I agree with all those things. I think with Seth, definitely the best path forward would be for Roman Reigns to show up and answer an open challenge and take the belt.
I just need more belts on Roman, man. It's going to be hilarious.
I'm intrigued to see where they go. I mean, Brock makes a lot of sense, you know, especially for like why you would have him go over Cody like that. And, you know, Cody got some protection in the way they did it, but still it's like, are they going to go into Brock right now? Maybe so.
Maybe.
That could be a whole lot of fun. What do you think, by the way, just speaking of what Seth's going to do next, what do you think about the Triple H awarding him the title and then Seth raising Triple H's hand with him as they were celebrating? Was that just like a Triple H is over in Saudi Arabia moment, or is Triple H going to be more involved in as an on-screen character?
I mean, he closed Raw with Cody and he was visible there. And even with the announcement of the World Heavyweight Championship, remember we just kept talking about like, man, who was really burying Roman? Really like...
Yeah, and they just kind of let that lie.
Yeah. So, I mean, maybe Hunter is going to be a lot more involved as far as being an on-screen character again. But
I mean, there's a perfect lane here, right? For him to be like rah-rah guy.
Yes.
Seth, you're the champion that fights. And then at some point, Seth's going to be like, dude, I got to hurt back. And Triple H is going to be like, you agreed, dude.
Yeah,
you
know? Dana White. That's, yeah. He's got to be the Dana White of WWE now and just be like the matchmaker and the guy who does, you know, who's also kind of got that. Yeah,
if they can walk that line, which shouldn't even be that fine, it shouldn't even be that difficult, but to do that, to be like, I'm an on-screen character and I'm actually playing it straight.
Yeah, you don't need to be. Yeah, you don't need to be the corporation authority on-screen characters have been done to death. I think Shawn Michaels has been doing a good job of that down at NXT, just being the straight man authority figure down there. Yeah, you're right. It shouldn't be that hard for them to pull off a Triple H, because I think that's kind of what makes the most sense in 2023 anyway. Cool. Yeah, definitely. So we'll see.
All right, Brian, what are you most excited about tonight?
Seth Rollins, I'm ready to see. We've been wanting this for so long, so I'm ready to see. I'm ready to hear the music. I'm ready to hear him sing his song.
Yeah, it's going to be really awesome. All right, guys. Well, thank you for doing this. Thanks as always, Kaz. You want to get your plugs in?
Yeah, man. I just want to say thanks to everybody who was really kind to me and had very nice words to say about the Ultimate Show and the Double or Nothing pre-show. Incredible time there. Entire staff at AEW was super class. Took care of my family. My mom was out there. So just want to shout out to everybody over there. They were really fantastic. And again, shout out to both cons for letting this be a thing that I can do. And really appreciated for that. But yes, say hello to Kaz, Loki, and Rosie.
Forbidden door is open.
The forbidden door, I guess, is cracked, I guess. I won't say it's open, but it's definitely cracked. But say hello to Kaz, Loki, and Rosie out right now. YouTube.com/Kazim. Catch me on Points Bet. Count it Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, or Friday. And right here on the Ring of Wrestling Show, man. Thank you all. You guys were really, really kind to me this weekend. I appreciate all the kind words. It was really nice. Thank you.
Brian, edit out all the parts where I was mean to Kaz. I don't want to be part of that. I don't want to be the only.
I'm growing a hive, Dave. I'm growing a hive. You do not want me to send my hive after you.
No, I'm a part of the Kaz hive. Brian Waters, thank you for producing the show. Kaz, thanks to you as always. Thanks everybody for listening. Make sure you listen to all the great shows on the Ringer Wrestling Show feed. This is going to be a big week. We got two episodes of the Masked Man Show. We have Cheap Pete, Peter Rosenberg's Friday Something, and of course Wednesday Worldwide, where Brian's always holding it down. Thank you for listening. Apologies as always to John Moxley. We'll see you back here on Thursday, Humanoids.
Peace.